What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I'm Jim McPhee, and right there is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going, Blindside Blitz Nation? What's going on? Welcome back for another one. Listen, it's a little cooler in the air. It's week one football, baby. We just got done with week one. A lot of exciting things have happened. Hey, we've even had some epic failures from teams that we thought were going to be on the up and coming. And unfortunately, no, it is a big pile of shit. So they fooled us. But hey, week one, you know, it's an exciting time for a lot of teams. You know, it's your first step into the season, your first chance to get win or lose. And it was a lot of excitement. Even if you did lose week one, it's just week one. So relax, kick back. And we're going to talk some NFL football with you guys. Also, don't forget, we are live right now. Make sure in the comment section down below you get active. You can ask us questions, comments. If you've got an opinion about something, make sure you drop it down below. Also, if you haven't already done so, do us a huge favor. Head over to YouTube for us at Grumblings Media. Hit that subscribe button. Don't forget, while you're there, hit that thumbs up button as well. It does help us to get more notarized with another audience. And also, tell a friend to tell a friend about us.
Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Joe, yeah, the season kicks off, and it did not disappoint, I guess, right, Joe? I mean, there's a lot of ups and downs all over, big surprises. And let's get right to it. Let's talk about it started off Thursday night here. Thursday night football with the Eagles and the Cowboys. First off, I guess, what's your takeaways from that game that started with a spit?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm sorry. What was the thinking there? You know, Jalen Carter, for him to be and it's not like he's just like, oh, a backup player, like, you know, just, it's okay, it's only a backup. No, Jalen Carter is like the backbone of the D-line. He is the guy that everybody looks towards to make some big-time plays, and he's done it in recent past, obviously last year in the Super Bowl, whatnot. But for him to go out there and get in the face of Dak Prescott and then spit at him, you know, it's one thing you want to talk trash and everything, but to get in his face and spit at him, now you got a $57,000 fine, okay, whatever, and we're going to move forward. But don't be stupid. You actually ended up hurting your team because you weren't available for them that game. You got kicked out, got ejected. So, Jalen Carter, I have no idea what that dude was thinking. It's insane.
Yeah, I know. And initially, I'm like, I don't know. I looked at it, it's like, man, he got ejected for spitting? Like, I've seen guys where they physically blast somebody, and you're like, you guys get a warning. If you do that again, then you're ejected. But a dude spits on somebody, you're like, that's it, buddy. You got to get the hell out of here. We don't go for that. I mean, and I was kind of like, wow, what the hell? But I get it now, thinking about it again, too. I mean, dude, you know, you got your all amped up, you know, emotions going here, and you just did it right in front of a referee in Dak Prescott's face. But later on, you do find out that Dak Prescott kind of instigated the thing and spit towards him in a sense. But like you said, Joe, even as a leader of that defense and a key piece of this defense, you got to think straight, buddy. You got to just be like, let it go. You can get in his face and back away and maybe even do the same thing that Dak did. You know what I mean? You know, step away. You got your field in front of you and just, you know, hawk to at him a little bit and like, let's move on, you know? Right. So that's what it started off with. Yeah. So they, without him the whole game. And one particular thing, again, I just noticed about this Eagles team, the secondary, we talked about questions with that secondary, and they were just getting picked apart by a Cowboys team where we thought their offense was going to be pretty good still, but, you know, not really a contender. But they came up to play, and they were throwing, like, all over. But then also the running game. I was surprised about the running game not being a factor here for the defense. So Vic Fangio's defense really falling on their face here. And it seemed like to me that you raise the banners, you know, for that game. They were amped up. They're thinking, we're the you know, Super Bowl champions. We're coming in here. And I think they got a little too ahead of themselves, a little too amped up. You got 9 penalties for 110 yards, and they just got hit in the mouth by the Cowboys, who really has nothing to play for. They've been told that they're not going to do well. They're stupid for not having Micah Parsons, and they came to play.
Yeah, I mean, and as far as the whole, you know, raising the banner thing, the team wasn't even out on the field for that ceremony. Mm-hmm. They were in the locker room. So they didn't have to get amped up for this game. This is a division rival who they absolutely, both sides hate each other. So there was going to be, you know, no, you know, fall off in terms of energy in this game, and it showed. Like, they were pumped up, both sides. They both wanted to show their best. And honestly, like, but the loss of Jalen Carter, to me, speaks volumes to that run defense. He was going to be there, Jordan Davis next to him, and they were going to be very difficult to move or even create holes from. So, I mean, the loss of Jalen Carter, to me, is a bigger deal for them and their run defense for the Eagles, and it showed Thursday night. Like, the Cowboys were able to run, and to my surprise, they were healthier across the front of the line than I thought they were going to end up being coming into week one. Mm-hmm. And they proved that, you know, with all those young guys now up front, with that offensive line of theirs, they're able to move some bodies, open up some holes, and get some yards from their running backs. Both Miles Sanders, you know, and Javonte Williams, both kind of cashed in a little bit here and there. And then their passing attack, we knew it was going to be dangerous. So for the Eagles, and like you mentioned, the secondary, the big weakness in that team isn't the secondary as a whole. They were attacking one side of the football predominantly, and it was because they just signed and stuck a guy there. You know what I mean? And they were rotating corners on that side to try to figure something out. Recently acquired Jacorian Bennett got a few snaps at, you know, on the opposite side of Quinyon Mitchell, you know, and there's a couple other of signees that they
Adoree Jackson, who's really getting picked on.
Adoree Jackson, listen, Adoree Jackson is a decent corner. He's not a starting corner. And it showed, you know, that night of the game. So Eagles got to figure something out. And Howie Roseman is not, he doesn't shy away from anything. Obviously, we've seen him make numerous trades as we approach this season. And now that it's here, he might be on the lookout for another corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a bunch, you know, in the free agent pool right now that I think could be serviceable, too. I mean, you've got Bradbury right there, who's a former Eagle, too, who could potentially go in there and play. But, yeah, that was the big takeaway there. I did think that Jalen Hurts played really well. I mean, but he did most of his plays with his legs. So I wasn't sure if they were just locking down the wide receivers here, that D of the Cowboys. But it seems like nothing was there. He had forever in the pocket. And this team that's a returning Super Bowl champion, I've got worries about them. I've got worries about them even making it to the Super Bowl here. But what I think they're going to be a good team, but they're not like what they were last year. He can't have 4 seconds in the pocket every single game here and still get that protection, have these guys protect him that long, and then figure out if he's finally going to take off with his legs and make a play or so. He only had 152 yards passing with zero touchdowns, zero INTs, but 62 yards rushing, and the two rushing TDs was the key factor to this whole thing. So Jalen Hurts, if he didn't ball like he did on his own, that is a tougher game. And the fact on the other side, the flip side, CeeDee Lamb, again, I've said this multiple times, what is with this dude? This dude can make miraculous catches, but then on the other hand, brick hands when it's right in the breadbasket. Easy slant, boom, right off the fingers. A can of corn that's right there over the top, boom, just right through his hands. For an elite wide receiver, he drops too many passes like that way too often and in key moments of the game because, like I said, there were so many times there that Dallas just could have beat these guys.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is you have to play your starters in preseason. Not a lot of teams are doing that. And that's why we had a sloppy week one. Let's face it. Across the board, all games, they were sloppy. They weren't all like, you know, nipped and tucked and ready to go, and there was hardly any miscues. There was a lot of miscues throughout the league, and it shows because the teams that do not play their starters in preseason every week and give them as much, you know, snaps and experience as possible before we get to week one, you're going to see sloppy football, and that's just what we saw. Mind you, also, the loss of Jalen Carter, we're going to come back to this over and over with this game because by not having him in the lineup, I know one man doesn't make a team, but he is a pivotal part of this D-line. And that's part of the reason why the Cowboys were allowed to run. That's part of the reason why there wasn't that much of a pass rush some at moments and times you know, and then for Jalen Hurts, like you brought up, you know, he ran a lot. He tried to sustain drives with his legs more often than not. And he made some nice throws. Don't get me wrong. Like he looked pretty good to me. But the thing that we're kind of overlooking is the fact that both defenses didn't look that great. Mm-hmm. Let's just call it what it is. Like the secondary on both struggled at times. Mm-hmm. And then for Jalen Hurts not being able to find an AJ Brown and get him the ball enough, or Devonta, like it was almost like they didn't have those guys available. That's what it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Brown didn't have any catches. He struggled all game. And I don't know if it was something that maybe newly signed Deron Bland. He just signed a deal to stay since they shipped out Micah Parsons. They got him locked in. You know, you got Trayvon Diggs back. Like, they're all healthy and they're ready to go. So maybe that did come into a factor because they were missing those pieces before. So this game, I will say this. One, underwhelming defense from both sides. I feel like their offenses are fine. But, man, going into this season, hopefully they end up getting better and starting to gel and maybe even going out there and acquiring a couple pieces because they both need something there. To me, it was the deciding factor in this game in closing for me is the fact that, like, Jalen Hurts kept plays alive with his legs. And later in the game, Saquon Barkley started to find some holes. Mm-hmm. He started to be able to get some of the gains that he normally would get and became a factor that way. So, ugly game.
Mm-hmm.
But also kind of fun to watch at the same time. It was a little weird.
Yeah, it was definitely weird. But again, takeaways, again, like you said, Jalen Hurts looked good. Dak Prescott, I think, played really well too. And unfortunately for him, just Dallas fans instantly going to Twitter or X and everything, like, oh, this guy sucks, got to go. Dude, he did not lose you that game. If you think that, oh my goodness. You know, what is wrong with you? He played his lights out. And again, CeeDee Lamb comes up with especially that big catch. I mean, that's in the end zone. I mean, so there was points left out on the field for Dallas. So it was a tight one. Philly's lucky to get out of there with a win. So.
Yeah, they really are. CeeDee Lamb, I mean, you can't blame one person for the loss.
Yeah.
You just can't. Yes, does it suck? Yeah. Uncharacteristically, he was dropping footballs and not making the plays that he usually makes in his sleep. So don't, you know, let's not put all the blame on CeeDee Lamb. Like, there was opportunities throughout this game, just like in any game, that you can put away a team and come out with the win. But this week wasn't their week.
Absolutely. All right, so, Joe, let's get to the Chiefs and the Chargers. They get it down here in Brazil. What a game. First of all, about this game I noticed is whoever they had playing the national anthem sucked. Like, they destroyed it. The saxophone player, I feel like it was a middle schooler saxophone player could have played that or better. Like, you know, I felt like it was really simple. Really, bro? Like, get somebody that plays jazz, something that goes nice, smooth. It was terrible. I feel like they butchered it on purpose. And then the Brazilian national anthem, in respect to Brazil and everything, but the national anthem was just boring. It just sounds like a bunch of Latin words over and over. And these dudes are out there and women crying to this national anthem all over. And then I'm just like, this sounds stupid, but whatever. You know, it is what it is. It's in Brazil. Give love to what they got to do. But I feel like they butchered the national anthem on purpose. Got some guy who's just started playing saxophone. But the game did not disappoint, Joe.
I will say this before we get to the game. I will say this. It was for the ceremonies that were leading up to the game and the hype around it because Brazil has yet another NFL game to go watch. I feel like they fell short of the, you know, planning and the, you know, the execution of the event. Like not just the national anthem and doing all these things, but also halftime show was kind of a little lackluster to me. It was really boring, just like you mentioned earlier, for them and all the musicians that were involved. Their execution, it was just like, yeah, this is it. Like, you guys got an opportunity to be internationally seen as a country that loves football, and this is all you could muster up. So, yeah, it was a little disappointing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, so getting to the Chiefs and the Chargers. Right away, again, Worthy goes down, so another wide receiver down for Patrick Mahomes. So, again, he was getting some pressure, a lot on his back, trying to make some plays. Oh, my gosh, so many other plays that things that he does is like you're always – like if you look at any other quarterback, you're looking at them and like, no, what are you doing? Like the hook throw that he does, he's jumping, he's almost down to the ground and twists and chucks it. Somehow gets it, though, to the wide receiver that's open or tight end. I'm like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that he pulled that off. But if he doesn't do any of that, I mean, this game is a blowout. Herbert and the Chargers, they came to play and they balled out. Herbert out of a hell of a game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the thing. Patrick Mahomes, that's what he's great at. Sometimes he's not going to be the best quarterback on the football field. Sometimes he has his struggles. We saw that last year. But this year, we expected like a much more streamlined, professional quarterback in Mahomes, getting these guys back, well, some of them so far. Now, with Worthy going out, that's definitely going to hinder them. But he seems to find an uncanny way to somehow, even when the odds are stacked against them, he's falling down on his face. Somehow, before he touches the ground, he flicks the ball to his tight end, who's just literally standing there, and makes a play. That's what makes Patrick Mahomes such a special quarterback, is the fact that when the play breaks down, somehow, some way, whether it be with his legs or some kind of weird throw that he makes that you don't see coming, he just makes plays. So that's first and foremost. Patrick Mahomes on that game, you know, 258 yards passing, 57 yards on the ground. And honestly, the ground attack from Mahomes is what kept this Chiefs offense in the game.
He was leading rusher.
Every time they were about to be three and out, he broke out of containment and went for that first down and got it. So it's like, without Mahomes' running ability, this team would have been a shell of themselves and it would have been a blowout. Chargers would have walked all over them. This is a Chargers team that came ready to play, like you just said. You know, Justin Herbert, also, no interceptions, three passing touchdowns, 318 passing yards. A lot to like from the Chargers offense. If you're a Chargers fan, guess what, Jim? We called it last year, and they listened for this year because they went through way more than anticipated. We were expecting a heavy running attack with newly drafted Amarian Hampton and seeing what he could do. But, man, Justin Herbert lighting it up, throwing it all over the football field. You got to like that as a Chargers fan, making connections. And that's what made this Chargers offense extremely tough to stop.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. Again, in the Chargers holding the run game, that, like you said, was key to like to a total with Pacheco and Hunt, it was like 40 yards combined. So then it's all on Mahomes. As you said, pin him back, and you can pressure him. Despite him making the phenomenal plays that he does, if he doesn't make some of those, you know, any other quarterback's not doing it, he still had to, he had, what, 39 attempts? You know, like you said. So, I mean, then you just pin your ears back and you go after him, and that's what they did. And it got a little shaky towards the end because one thing that the Chargers do also as well is kind of back off a little bit. They think they got it, they're flying high, and then all of a sudden they're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, we're letting them back in it. We can't do this. You know, let's lock it in. And luckily they solidified it, especially with that big touchdown in the corner to their young rookie. What a catch, man. Oh, my goodness. It was a great one-handed bring-in, toe-tap swag. That was a catch of the week until I think in the Vikings game there was a one-handed toss too as well. There were a lot of great plays throughout this weekend too that really shined.
Yeah, there was a one-handed interception that was
incredible
by a Panther defender of all. You know what I mean? So it had plenty of plays for sure.
Absolutely. So what does this mean? Again, I told we said it in last week, again, big games where the Chiefs need to win. They needed to win this one because, again, now they face the Eagles. But looking at the Eagles from last week there, they're not the same team that they faced in the Super Bowl. So that showdown will be a little more intriguing too as well. But again, you know, is Xavier were they going to be able to play too? He had that dislocated shoulder. I mean, it's
no,
rough.
He's not. He's out.
Yeah.
He's out.
So, I mean, there's going to be some issues here. There's going to be some issues here for both teams But again, Chiefs, one they needed to get away with here. But we'll see what happens with the rest of the future of this season here. That West division got a hell of a lot tighter. The Chiefs lose, and all the other teams win. So how about that?
That's right.
All right, so let's move on to the Ravens and Bills. This was going to be the game of the week, and it did not disappoint. But let me tell you, the Ravens, they came hungry. They came to play. Derrick Henry still doing his thing, stiff-arming people all over the place, shoving them down, doing his thing. Lamar doing his thing. They had everything rolling for him, Joe. The only thing that the Bills really had, though, again, was – Josh Allen, right? Josh Allen making plays all over the place by himself. James Cook was making a showing, though, too, when they did get it to him, too. I think running off that whole Josh Allen, stop him, then they would do the delay handoff, and then it opened it up, the running game, in the reverse kind of, because everybody's teeing up on Josh Allen in the passing game, what they're doing. Keon Coleman also making a play. You talked about it last week. Him needing to step up, and he stepped up big this week.
Yeah, you know, and that was a pleasant surprise for Buffalo fans out there, as well as Josh Allen. He's been waiting for this guy to step up and deliver, and he did in this game a couple times. And for the Bills, it's kind of concerning to me, honestly, for the Buffalo Bills. And we talk about all these former playoff teams from last year, how they're different. Well, the Bills are different. You know, they bring in Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa was there, but not a glaring, you know, factor, to be honest. Like, I understand he's older and whatnot, but the reason why you're paying him the money you're paying him and bringing him there for at least 1 year is the fact that you're hoping that you can catch lightning in a bottle and maybe get some shade of what he used to be in terms of sacks and creating immense pressure. But so far, I will say the Baltimore Ravens offensive line did a number on them for the most part. For the Bills, though, looking forward, they still have a kind of weak defense, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I was expecting better play on, you know, from them from that side of the ball, and I just didn't really see it. They had trouble stopping the run yet again. You know, it's like the same Bills defense from last year, and it's like nothing has really changed. You know, yeah, we got a couple of different names in the lineup, but like, that's going to be concerning going forward now. Now, are the Bills going to have to be this type of team where they got to score 30, 40 points every week to try to win games? Because if their defense can't step up, yeesh, I don't know about their playoff run.
Yeah, I agree, too. Again, their defense not as good. And that's why I kind of sided with the Baltimore Ravens, and it looked like a good pick for most of the game. Double-digit leads, Joe, and this is what the narrative that pops up every single time. Mm-hmm. Under John Harbaugh, right? The Baltimore Ravens, they've given up double-digit leads in the fourth quarter and lost 17 times. It's the most in the NFL that as any coach has since 1991. The most recent instance, again, was this past weekend here. We did it again. They had a big lead in the fourth quarter. They pretty much have it, and they go soft on defense. I'm like, what are they doing? They're playing soft zone. Go back to what you were doing before. You're letting off the gas. You had that place roaring. Zay Flowers is playing, and he's waving to everybody. Hey, I'm back, and look at what you're doing. You're lighting it up. You're chumming it up on the side, having a grand old time. Meanwhile, Josh Allen's like, all right, meanwhile, these guys, clowns, are fooling around. We're getting to business. Let's go do this. It was like the freaking Trojan horse rolling right up into Troy while everybody's partying, getting drunk and partying. And then Josh Allen comes roaring out of the damn horse and, you know, starts taking him out. He's Achilles, taking everybody out. And, you know, I think with a little help from the refs a little bit too, I'm just saying, Josh Allen and those guys get it done. But the Baltimore Ravens, like I said, under John Harbaugh, have done it time and time again, and I think even the media brought it up to him, the fact that even 6 years times in the last couple of years, since 2022, he's done it. And this is one thing. If you want to be the team in the AFC with the team that you have, you need to close games. The bottom line, this has been the narrative about the Baltimore Ravens. Close games, because it sure is telling Lamar Jackson's fault.
Well, here's the thing about closing games for the Ravens. It seems to rely heavily on Lamar Jackson at times, and it's always down the stretch of a game. It's the second half of the game. Even the same with this Buffalo Bills game. You know, where Lamar could have taken off and got easy first downs, He stayed in the pocket and tried to throw the football. And we've seen this before. Tale of two halves for Lamar Jackson. First half, dude was running at will. Dude was throwing the football when needed. And everything was – and Baltimore Ravens were very difficult to stop. And then second half, they still had the running game with Derrick Henry. But then when it came time to getting those crucial first downs and keeping the drive going, Lamar Jackson with the ball in his hand, you're like, okay, well, either he's going to throw it or he's going to break out and take off and get that first down. And we didn't see that in down the stretch in the second half. That's where that's one of the pivotal points in this game where the Ravens could have literally just took over that game. And that where the Buffalo Bills, it would have been impossible to come back. There would have been not enough time left. And then obviously the biggest elephant in the room for this whole game was Derrick Henry's fumble.
Yeah.
And the fact that like everybody's looking at as the reason that the Ravens lost. No. There was opportunities to get first downs, to sustain drives, to wear the clock down more before that fumble even came about. So, I mean, for me, yes, that is a big, big mistake. Derrick Henry's well aware of it. You could see it on his face when it happened. He's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Not again. Like, now we're going to let this team back in it. And you could just feel it in the stadium. You could feel the tides turning on the Ravens. And because of the mistakes, because of the lack of execution down the stretch, that's why they have an L.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, management at the end, it seems like it gets under 4 minutes and they don't know how to manage the game. And like you said, also, Derrick Henry, when you need him on those downs, you put Justice Hill in and he's getting the handoffs. And then when you said Lamar, you could see him hesitate and then hold it and then, you know, whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
Make a little play, go down. Right. Go for it. You're there. He wanted to make sure you passed to get, you know, that first down or something. Like, no, you can run it by then, you know? And, and yeah, I agree. Well, like I said, they got to close games because if you're going to be that team, which I feel like they have everything about them that could be a Super Bowl champion, they got to close because that's been the whole time, the story the whole time. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We see these teams face each other again in the playoffs. Let's see if it the tides turn and they learn it by then. They got to make it there first, though, right? All right, so next let's look at Monday Night Football here. Last night's game, the tale of two halves.
Oh, my God. Talk
about tale of two halves. Oh, my goodness, dude. And this one, I'm just going to say it again. I feel like, and we saw it throughout the whole weekend, poor officiating. In unchecked officiating, you know, I mean, call from, you know, New York was able to flip a switch, but I know it's never going to change, but pass interference, getting the penalty that it is when, you know, it's not reviewable. And it's just ridiculous because when you've got Troy Aikman again, and he even says it on the call, listen, I've already get in trouble for being outspoken about this. He's like, but the referees again in the calls, he's being honest about it. And when I agree with Troy Aikman, there's a freaking problem.
That is a problem, right? Yeah.
So I feel like that pass interference call—that's when everything changed. Because if they don't get that, I mean, that play was dead to rights. The Vikings couldn't get the offense going at all. Barely get a running game. That seemed like that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to do it like if you had a rookie quarterback in there. Hey, let's try and keep the ball going. Let's run. Try and keep it. Protect him. Give him easy throws or whatever. But that Bears defense wasn't having it. They were shutting it down left to right, just standing in front of him, batting the ball down in his face. It was like when I used to play ball against my son, and I would just tower over him. You're going to throw it over and just whack it back in his face for fun. You know, like, he's only like 4 or 5. It's like, all right. But that's what it looked like. And this is the NFL, Joe. And then it changed.
Yeah, I was pretty upset watching that football in the beginning where the Minnesota Vikings, I understand you're trying to protect your rookie quarterback. You don't want to put too much pressure on him, especially, you know, week one, you're in Chicago, division rival. There's a lot of hype around it, a lot of pressure. So you tried to, you know, camouflage him in the playbook and not have him do too much. And I get that, but you had to know the game plan for the defense of the Bears. The Bears already have a stunning defense. They already were game planning to stop the run, force your rookie to throw the football. But instead of coming into that game and being aggressive, and I'm not saying chuck the ball on deep routes like 40, 50 yards down the field and see if he can catch a ball, you know, on the defense, catch him sleeping. No, I'm saying you could have still done high percentage throws, wide receiver screens, have your running back leak out of the backfield, dump it off to him and get some yards that way. Like, simplify the offensive game plan, but still be able to throw the football on early downs until that defense backs off, and then you can mix in the run. So I was really disappointed in Kevin O'Connell, knowing what was at stake, knowing that, you know, going into that game and how much they were struggling too. Like, at some point in the first half, you're like, you know what? We can't keep running the ball on early downs. We're getting third and long. It's third and eight, third and 12, and we're not being able to execute. So you had to change that role for him. And we didn't see that change until the second half.
Yeah, exactly. The second half, and yeah, it changed. It was grim. The pick six, I mean, everything was going downhill for him. And he could even quit and fold it up. I mean, but he kept going, and it seemed like once he started to kind of change some things, it makes some things happen, get a rhythm. That's when Kevin O'Connell, I think, kind of was like, all right, this guy's here. He's comfortable now. I'm going to unleash it a little bit. Let's go take some of those deeper bombs down to, you know, Justin Jefferson. I'm sure Justin Jefferson was getting on him too. Like, listen, come on, give me the ball. You know, I'm out here doing rounds. You guys aren't getting me the ball. Let's do this, you know. So had to get it to your playmakers, and it seemed like that's when it started moving, him being him, because I felt the same way that you did, Joe. I felt like they just had a gate on them, and they were just like, stay in this, stay in this, stay in this.
Stay in your lane.
Keep doing this thing.
Stay in your lane.
It's, even though it's not working, just like, dude, we're just doing the same thing. It's very mediocre, very right. Vanilla. I'm like, is this preseason? Like, what the hell are we looking at here? And they got it going, and then you saw him be him. And that's what I think they need to let him do.
They do. And then on the other side for the
exactly.
first half of the yep. football game, you mm-hmm. have Chicago. And I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of Caleb Williams. I didn't think he was going to be able to take that next step. But obviously with Ben Johnson, you can see the flash in the first half. You saw him execute all the plays on time, looked through his progressions at times when he had to, and deliver that football accurately and on time. Something that we never saw from him or didn't see enough of last year. But, man, that whole first half, that offense for Chicago and Caleb Williams, they were running smooth as silk. And they were making everything count, executing, running the football with DeAndre Swift, throwing the football to DeAndre Swift. Like, there was a lot of things and a lot of players that got involved throughout that first half. You're like, wow, can Chicago just run through Minnesota now? Because you've seen the struggle on offense from Minnesota, and then the defense for the Vikings. This is supposed to be a very good defense, and in the first half, they couldn't stop anything. The Bears, on the other hand, were the Bears. The Bears have a very good defense, and then they were able to execute and move forward.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. And that's the thing. It's like when you saw the first half, that's why I'm even saying tail of first half, the crowd's into it. The defense is roaring. Like I said, they've got this down. They're like, dude, this guy's a rookie guy. We've got this. I mean, a defense, you know, a rookie, he's not a rookie. He got drafted last year or whatever. He wasn't able to play. But first time stepping on the field, and it showed. You know what I mean? You got right. some of that, you know. And this defense was just licking their chops on this one. On the other hand, you said – Caleb Williams, again, staying in the pocket, kind of doing what he does and making plays and making it happen. But then when it seemed like when the game started to get out of hand or things started to get tough, it seemed like, for me, it looked like Caleb Williams was reverting back to himself, like forgetting what Ben Johnson has been training him this whole time and started kind of getting back into his, oh, I got to scramble out around here. I got to make a play. I got to run away here. And he kept not wanting to take off, so he tried to stop and throw still, but then not make a deal, make a thing happen. And where it comes down to where you didn't like him, I think, as well, yes, you've got athleticism in the plays that he can make using his legs, but oh, yeah. in the pocket, missing a wide-open receiver for a big score, you know, getting more time on the clock even, too. You're going to score a touchdown on that one. That was key for the game. You need to step up in those moments and hit a wide open right receiver. No real pressure. The pocket was clean, and just overthrew him by a mile.
Yeah.
That's key.
Right. And you go into that second half where Caleb Williams reverted back to where what he was doing the same thing last year. And it boggles my mind because this is a guy who looks so good in the first half. What changed? Pressure. The Vikings defense started to manipulate the offensive line, throw a little bit of blitzes here and there, outside, inside, mix it up, make it, you know, disguise it, all of that. And they were confusing Caleb Williams at the line of scrimmage. Caleb Williams struggled so much so because of the immense pressure, he just couldn't deliver the ball right. He couldn't get his mechanics down. He couldn't find the guy necessarily open quick enough. So it was a tale of two halves, like you say, but Caleb Williams was a shell of himself in the second half.
Yeah, exactly, Joe. I mean, and that's what made it a game here, too. I feel, again, that phantom pass interference call. I mean, I don't know if you agree, if you thought that was pass interference or not. I didn't think it was. Troy didn't. No. And there was a few different calls in that game and others throughout the NFL.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
We're going to get this. I mean, we complain about the refs all the time and things like
it's
that. And everything's are on and off. So, but it always kills me when that's a motivation changer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Right there. And you just felt the air, the life taken out of the thing. And that changed the whole dynamic.
Right.
It's almost like the WWE moments. The player's getting pummeled to death. And the guy, the wrestler, he's down. And then all of a sudden, Hulkamania, you know what I mean? He starts shaking his hands like, oh, man, what's this? And he's like, oh, then all of a sudden he's taking a punch, and he's like, no, ooh, Ultimate Warrior, you know what I mean? And then they come back, and you're kind of like, this is where fans are like, this has got to be script with what the hell just happened.
So what I'll say in closing for this game for me is in the second half, we talked about Chicago and how they struggled. I don't think defensively they struggled. Even though they gave up the scores that they did and stuff, they're still a really good defense in my book. The Vikings, it's the halftime adjustments from Kevin O'Connell with the defense with, Brian Flores and then Kevin O'Connell with the offense in the second half. They made whatever changes necessary and it showed that they fought their way back into the game and were able to take over the lead and get the W. So kudos to the coaching staff. Kudos to the players for executing for Minnesota and Chicago. Going to be a rough week for them and Ben Johnson because he's pissed.
Yeah, it was a game they definitely let off the hook in a game, a divisional one that they needed to get. When you got the Vikings like that, I mean, you had a chance to bury this team right away. So, all right, let's talk about one more game here. I think that's interesting, and then we'll get into Joe's got some fantasy must add, so you guys got to stick around for that. Lions and Packers. A lot of people towards the end too. I'm listening to all these guys talk about the money lines and stuff. And they're like, "Here we go. This is great. Lions are the underdog in this one. You guys got to go all money on Lions." And I was like, "No, the Packers." We talked about it when we did our picks. Packers, man, at home. But I didn't expect what the hell just happened there, Joe. So the question here is like, are the Packers really just that good now, or did the Lions just kind of they were just unprepared, you know?
I mean, honestly, when you watch this game, I think the Lions were prepared, but they came into a energized stadium with the Green Bay Packers in Wisconsin, and you had to contend with, oh, by the way, Packers defense was already good, like really good. And they traded for Micah Parsons, and that was the cherry on top on this defense. You saw immense pressure. The Detroit Lions offensive line is not the same, everyone.
No.
They've lost a couple players here and there, and they've never really replenished them. They got some young guys that they brought in the draft. You know, Dylan Fairchild playing guard for the first time. So maybe the spotlight was a little too bright for them. And it showed playing the Green Bay Packers, a veteran defense, and especially adding Micah, was a huge addition. It was tremendous to watch. If you're a fan of defense, this game and the Packers, what they were able to do to the Detroit Lions front and just completely rattle, Jared Goff, just dismantle the offense that they had, the prowess. Yes, Amon-Ra St. Brown got his catches, of course. They were able to complete some things,
A couple,
did some good
but
things.
Still.
But I'll tell you right now, that Packers defense is for real. And then you add on top of it, and we mentioned this last week, Jim, about Jordan Love has to step back up, has to be the Jordan Love of 2 years ago, not last year. And he showed up. He was distributing the football to anybody he felt like throwing it to. I mean, the running game with Josh Jacobs, the passing game with Josh Jacobs, like everything was working out well. The young offensive line in front of them, it was almost like they couldn't do any wrong in that game.
Yeah.
And
then
the Lions, very different. I didn't see the defense for the Lions show up at all. Like, where was Aiden Hutchinson? Was he playing? Because they locked him out pretty much all game. So, I mean, for me, what I've noticed, I know it's only week one. I know we shouldn't overreact too much. But the Detroit Lions, they got some work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, they've got a lot of work to do. They just, like I said, didn't expect that or whatever. They just got a rude awakening, that offensive line. Again, it showed. And welcome Green Bay Packers here. You know, they're going to be a force to be dealt with. And like you said, Jordan Love, you know, I always liked him again, and I think he's done well. Again, I just question, you know, what goes down. It's like he's a different dude in the playoffs, but still cool, calm, collect. I like that about him. He just moves forward and goes and making plays with his legs, his arms, the running game. The Packers are no joke right now, you know. And Matt LaFleur, again, I got to give him kudos because I didn't give that guy a shake at all when he first got the job. You know, I was like, this guy didn't prove anything for the Titans, wasn't a great offensive coordinator for them at all. You know, he had Derrick Henry and whatever. Yeah. And, wow, he has just absolutely blown my mind. So,
real quick, Jim, we got to give a shout-out to Derpy Entertainment. He had a couple comments for us. He said he was rooting for the Bears when we were talking about the Bears and Vikings. And then said, and of course, the Bears made J.J. look like prime Brady. Well, I don't know if it was prime Brady, but I will say this. They definitely made him look better. And I don't blame the Bears defense for that. I still felt like they were playing well. But J.J. McCarthy was able to be himself and kind of take over. Obviously, we know his mobility. It wasn't really used that much at Michigan, but when you unleash him and allow him to take off for those first downs and whatnot, that's going to be part of his game. And it should be because that's what makes him dangerous.
Yep. Right. And that's what I thought was different. Again, the second half, you didn't see that in the first half. They didn't even want him to really run. They were just like, hand it off. Didn't do any plays. It wasn't until down one again. I think it was the 2-point conversion when he faked the handoff and he just walked over on the outside wide open to see
that. Was a great play.
So, absolutely.
Great execution. And for JJ, he even tried, the first half he tried to get out and take off, but they just kept tripping him up. He just couldn't quite get out early enough. So, well, I'm curious to see his development and maturity grow as the season progresses.
All right, absolutely, Joe. So, like I said, we're talking about it. We're talking some fantasy football. I know a lot of fantasy teams probably had a rough week one because, let me tell you, the runners didn't do anything. You know what I mean? Injuries on top of everybody. 49ers just hit hard again. We talked about them staying healthy. Oh, my gosh. The
talk
key players,
about it.
It's like, and boom, there they are, just like that. And everybody, again, not playing in preseason, these soft tissue injuries and this and that. Oh, my gosh.
All I have to say is the people that took George Kittle early in the draft, whether it be in the third or fourth round, whatever, wherever you ended up taking him, for him now to be out for at least 4 weeks with a hamstring pull. Thank God it's not serious, but, man, now you're going to have to do some digging. That's okay. I got you hooked up right here. I got a couple of players for you guys that I have a couple of players for each position. So if you guys are in need, if you guys didn't draft well, if for some reason, you know, there was a guy that someone else took on you and you just kind of like, whatever, I'll just take this one player and be done with it. Now's the time to make some changes. So guys that are not performing for you, I know it's only week one, but again, guys that are struggling, I got some answers for you guys out there. I'm going to start off with the defense for fantasy. Usually defenses are kind of like that second to last type of that in terms of value for a position. But Rams, you know, the Rams defense in my book, they're young. They're relentless, and we saw that this past week from them, and they were able to get after the quarterback and get sacks. They scored 14 points as a fantasy defense. If they are available in your league, you need to go grab them because they are young and tenacious, and they're going to help you out the whole season. Another one that is surprising to me that is available in a lot of leagues. Some people didn't even draft the 49ers defense. With Robert Saleh returning, Robert Saleh's back. That should be enough for you to pick this defense. They come downhill and they're aggressive. They scored 12 points in fantasy this week. So there's a couple of defenses. If you are looking for defense or need some help in that area, need a backup, go ahead and grab those guys if they're available in your leagues. That brings me to the tight ends. And we just mentioned George Kittle going down. Listen, if you had George Kittle, you're looking for someone, could you pick up their backup? Sure. But I got some better players for you. I got none other than Saints tight end, Juwan Johnson, who had 11 targets, everybody, double-digit targets in week one. You got Spencer Rattler at quarterback. You know he's going to be looking for that tight end, that security blanket. He had 11 targets to Juwan Johnson, 8 catches, 76 yards, giving you some double-digit points. So go ahead and go out there and grab that guy if you need help at tight end. Also, another one to keep in mind, we all thought that David Njoku was going to be the tight end one for the Cleveland Browns, didn't we? Well, they did draft a tight end by the name of Harold Fannin Jr., who didn't play just tight end. He played multiple positions in week one. He played slot receiver, played tight end, played running back, fullback, and yes, even quarterback for a snap. So this guy is being heavily utilized in the offense for Cleveland, and so much so that he had 9 targets, 7 catches, 63 yards, and 1 rush, actually, as a running back for 3 yards. So this dude is so involved in the offense, unlike David Njoku in week one. So I'm sorry. I'm going all in for Harold Fannin Jr. If you can get your hands on him, need a backup, or even need a replacement, go and get him after week one. That brings me to wide receivers. Now, wide receivers, I got not 2, but 3 guys for you. I'm just going to list them right through. Calvin Austin for the Steelers, Kayshon Boutte from the New England Patriots, Quentin Johnson from the Chargers. Most of these guys in almost every league are available after the draft. Nobody expected Quentin Johnson to take that next step, but he did in a big way. 7 targets, 5 catches, 79 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So he has over 20 points in your league. You need to go grab him if he's available. Kayshon Boutte, 8 targets, 6 catches, 103 yards, was heavily utilized in the Patriots offense. Drake May looks like he has a favorite target there. And then wide receiver Calvin Austin for the Steelers, 6 targets, 4 catches, 70 yards, and a touchdown. He looks like the guaranteed number 2 wide receiver in that offense that we were trying to figure out. But he is the guy for Aaron Rodgers as the number 2 receiver there. And that brings me to running backs. We love running backs, right? So much so that they're pretty much all taken up in fantasy. However, there's a couple of sleeper running backs right now that you can go out and get. And maybe down the road, they're going to get more and more of a prominent role. What was surprising to me with the Pittsburgh Steelers offense is that we kind of expected Jaylen Warren to be the number 1. And he was. But not by a big gaping spot of reps and catches and everything like we expected. Obviously, they have Caleb Johnson, who they drafted too, but he also wasn't that involved as well. So, like, what was surprising to me is I saw a lot of reps going to Kenneth Gainwell, newly signed this offseason. He had 7 rushes for 19 yards. Now, these numbers aren't going to be extravagant or anything, but hold on and listen to me for a second. 3 catches with 4 yards. You're like, oh, who cares? I'm not going to pick that guy up. Well, here's the thing. Kenneth Gainwell was used in both 2-minute drills, 100% of the snaps, and also in third down, on a third down all the time was in the game. His role could expand further because he's showing just as much promise as maybe a Jaylen Warren or a Caleb Johnson. All of those running backs seem to struggle, but Kenneth Gainwell, to be honest with you, if he's going to be on the football field for every third down and 2-minute drills, it shows that the Steelers offense and Arthur Smith is having more and more confidence in Kenneth Gainwell. So if you want to go ahead and add him, stash him for later and see if he ends up, you know, coming back and helping you when you need a running back the most. He's a good stash player right now. And then also running back Will Shipley. Will Shipley, unfortunately, got a little banged up this week, so he really screwed me in my presentation of running backs. but I liked what I see from him. When he comes back from injury, he is a backup right behind Saquon Barkley. He is going to be this kind of like receiving threat for them. And also he ran between the tackles, had only 3 rushes, but had 26 yards. And with this backup role behind Saquon Barkley, when he comes back, you might not have to add him right now, but maybe you want to stash him. Maybe you have an empty roster spot that you can just add him and keep him there until he comes back. His role could expand as well as we go further in the season. And last but not least, everybody's favorite position, quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's right, quarterbacks. And guess what? You'll never guess who lit it up this week in week 1. None other than Indianapolis Colts' new quarterback, Daniel Jones, with 29 fantasy points, y'all.
I'm talking,
that is insane. 29 points as a quarterback is crazy. It doesn't happen too often, unless you got maybe Lamar Jackson. But 22, he went 22 of 29 for passing, 272 yards, a touchdown. Oh, yeah, guess what? He also has wheels. He ran 7 times for 26 yards and rushed for 2 touchdowns. So this dude in week 1 was a pleasant surprise for the Indianapolis Colts. Now, going forward, they did play the Dolphins. And the Dolphins' defense, I'm sorry, but they sucked. I don't think – I think this could be a little bit of overreaction to go ahead and add him. But I know there are teams out there that maybe they waited too late to draft quarterback and they took a shot on someone and it didn't really pan out. But what I saw from Daniel Jones is he actually looked confident. He looked composed in the pocket and delivering the football wherever he saw fit. So I think Daniel Jones, if you're in dire need of a quarterback, wouldn't be a bad one to add in my book. That brings me to my second quarterback, and that is Geno Smith for the Raiders. I know what you're thinking. You're like, well, it's the Raiders. Like, their defense sucks. But, you know, why would I pick him up? Well, that's the reason why you would pick him up, because the Raiders are always most likely going to be playing from behind. And they have to always throw the football all the way through all 4 quarters. So this, and Geno Smith is one of the most accurate quarterbacks. He's really good, actually. He had 17 fantasy points this week going into New England, which many thought that the Raiders were going to lose. And Geno Smith propelled this offense 24 out of 34, you know, in terms of attempts and completions. And then you had 362 yards passing, 1 touchdown. Yes, he did have a pick, but he also ran for 10 yards. So, I mean, he wouldn't be a bad backup if you already have your starter. You could still add him as a little bit extra value. Or, again, like if you just waited too long for quarterbacks, it wouldn't be a bad idea to go get Geno Smith right now. And this Raiders offense, with all the weapons that he has to throw to, I highly doubt he's going to be in the lower category. He's going to be sought after if you don't get him now before bye weeks come.
There you go. All right, there's the must fantasy ads by Joe here. I like it. It's funny is too, again, like especially when you're talking like Daniel Jones, week 1, he's probably out there in the waiver wire all over. Nobody decided to pick him up even.
Oh, nobody drafted him.
Probably.
Nobody
drafted him. So it's just crazy. So. Worth the shot though, again, just in case, you don't have a good backup. Like, maybe you're just one of those guys too. You draft your quarterback, but then you wait until the bye week comes up or something and you're like, oh, I need somebody or whatever. This guy could be a surprise guy to put in as your fill-in quick if you need him quick, you know, depending, especially if he strings it together, you know, and that's the thing. You want to try and get these guys while they're hot or right before they start getting hot. So then you can pick them up off the waiver wire. You know, and get in front of some of these other players out there. So, yeah, absolutely, Joe. Sounds good. I love the advice. So that's it for the show, everybody. We really appreciate you guys joining in with us. We love the comments out there, too, as well. Don't forget, we have some Grumblings Media swag. That's right. There you go. Scan the QR codes right there to get yourself the brand-new 15-ounce, the Ooh, big one, the 15. Big black daddy right there. Boom, the Grumblings Media mug. Get it. right there. Love it. Love me some hot black coffee right there and that. So get yourself the T-shirt, too, as well. You got to get the Growing Media T-shirt right there. We are currently designing our own for the Blindside Blitz as well. So we're going to get you guys some Blindside Blitz merch, too. So much love to everybody out there. Spread the word. Make sure you guys subscribe to the channel, Grumblings Media, on YouTube. And you can also listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it. We're on it. We appreciate all the love, you guys. And we'll see you guys in the next one.